In 2017, the all-female Cuban quartet, Vocal Vidas, were invited to perform their first show in America, just as U.S.-Cuba relations were closing. And what began as a concert became a journey across physical and ideological borders, an affirmation of the connective power of music, even in the most uncertain of times. The journey of the Vocal Vidas came to resemble the story of two cultures, geographically close, yet ideologically disparate, as they began to reconnect in the face of international uncertainty. There are two interwoven journeys to discuss here, and we are pleased to have Robin Unger, producer of Soy Cubana, with us today to talk about the subjects of this feature and the evolution of its making. Robin Unger, welcome to the 22nd Annual Port Townsend Film Festival.
Thank you, Chris. It is such a treat to be here. And I put here in quotes because we're not there, really. Just thinking back to 2017, when we were invited to Port Townsend and with the short documentary, Soy Cubana, I know what I'm missing, not being there physically. It is such a great community, so supportive, and not to mention an incredibly beautiful village, town. I fell in love with the place and the people. So it's great to be back.
It's truly a village in all of the good ways. Well, the small towns have good things and bad things about them, but it does take a village, and this is a very supportive village.
Really, true.
Well, this was the making of a documentary, and it went through an evolution. As in the making of all documentaries, so much is grounded in relationships and evolution and patience and openness and listening. Mm-hmm. How did this all start? What drew you to Cuba and these wonderful performers in the first place?
Well, it all started back in 2014, right at the end of the year. I ended up on a trip, people-to-people cultural exchange, going to Cuba. And because I chose a three-week-long trip that focused on archaeology, I ended up in Santiago de Cuba, which is very far from Havana, and a lot of tourists don't get over there. So cut to ending up in Santiago, they took us to a big fortress, probably from the 14, 1500s, called El Moro, like the one in, if people have been to Havana, very similar structure, stone structure. We ended up walking through, hearing in the background these voices and wondering, where is this coming from? These angelic voices. And we got to this little stone chapel where the Vocal Vidas were singing for like three people, by the way. And then maybe with us coming in, it was up to seven people. It was just one of those moments when, you know, with music, sometimes it kind of transcends language and you have that feeling of goosebumps and joy, and just the harmonies that these women were producing were incredible. A cappella quartet. And I took out my cell phone and filmed them doing a few songs. And I just thought, this is too good not to share with the rest of the world. And here I am with seven people listening to this quartet. Long story short, I ended up going home and showing the video clip from the phone to my husband and my son, who are both in the film industry. My son's a director. He had never directed a documentary. He's a narrative filmmaker and a theater director. But he said to me, you know what? These women are really special. Before I even said documentary, they kind of knew, because my entire life I'd always wanted to make a documentary. And I am a speech pathologist with brain injured people by trade. But I'd always thought one day I would love to make a documentary film. So they kind of knew what was in the back of my head. And Jeremy, my son, said, look, I'll find somebody to go back with you to Cuba. You should make a film. And a couple of days later, he called me and he said, you know what? I'll go with you and let's approach my good friend. It was actually a guy from high school. They'd both gone off to college. Evila went to NYU for filmmaking. Jeremy went to Carnegie Mellon for theater directing. But they still were very close friends, like brothers. He talked to Evila. We had a meeting. Evila signed on to go. And 6 months later, we were back in Santiago making that short documentary.
You ended up in Santiago making this documentary. And one thing that it appears to me, at least from seeing the short version of the documentary that first came out, is that having a director with a narrative background was really, I don't know, in my mind, maybe essential for this film.
I think it was. And, you know, you're the only person that I think has ever said that to me, but I think it truly was because he could really look at what was happening. And we knew we had to have a story arc, especially as things evolved. Really having that narrative component was critical. Because again, you know, you get hours and hours of footage. I think by the time we had finished, we had well over 100 hours of footage with the feature film. And it's kind of like, okay, what is the story here? In kind of continuing. So 2017, there I was in Port Townsend, and I was contacted by an organization, a nonprofit called Grand Performances. They had seen the short. They're in Los Angeles. And they said, you know what? Let's bring the Vocal Vitas to LA to perform. Again, we talk about our journeys and serendipity and being able to kind of go with that flow. And I just thought, man, if they come, we have to continue filming. We can't not get this because we had this little 16-minute short that was sort of on fire. It went to 60 festivals and won 10 awards. People kept coming to me and saying, when are they coming to LA? And then suddenly I've got, you know, Grand Performances saying, let's make it happen. So, wow, it was 2017 was quite a year because the Vocal Vitas, their first album came out, you know, a legitimate album in Cuba. They won the Cuba Disco Award for Best Vocal Group, which is like a Grammy in Cuba. But still, they're this small group from Santiago, and they're still just basically doing their little gigs around town. So for them to be told, you know, we're going to try to get you here. Get ready, because a couple of the venues had said, we'd like them to do 2 one-hour sets, different sets. And honestly, I thought, oh my God, do they even have that much material? They said, yeah, no problem. We can do it. And so they proceeded to prepare. I mean, I didn't really even know how much preparation they were doing. They really prepared for that trip. And I don't want to say too much because I don't want to spoil it, but it was difficult getting them here. And we literally didn't know until less than 24 hours before they were going to actually make that trip.
You know, Robin, the circumstances surrounding the political circumstances and the cultural circumstances and all the rest of that surrounding, even proposing to make a journey at that time to the United States was multi-layered, to say the least, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we were really on a roller coaster because 2014, right after I got back, Obama opened the doors to Cuba. So there we were in 2017. We now had a new president who, I think it was June, closed the doors, basically.
Slammed the doors.
Everybody was wondering what's going to happen here, but U.S. Embassy was not closed until after the proposed trip for them. They were coming end of July, first part of August for 3 weeks. Embassy was still open. So we had this little window in which maybe it would happen. But there, I got to tell you, there were a lot of people involved in making this trip, this journey occur. It was not for the weak of heart, that's for sure.
What was the most memorable problem that you had to solve in that whole process?
I think it was just waiting for the visas and knowing they had to travel 16 hours from Santiago to Havana to get these visas. And it was the day before they were to come. And I was in this room that I'm in right now doing this talk. My phone rang. It was Anita, and it was 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So it was 5 o'clock Friday in Cuba. And she said, we got the visas. And they were on the plane the next day at 1 o'clock PM. So it was that down to the wire. But it was also for me, oh my God, we are making a film. And I had to call Jeremy and Evilu and just say, get ready, because, you know, we've got to go to the airport tomorrow and we have to make sure they have a place to stay. And we got to make sure we've got a lot of people involved in the recording of the sound and the whole thing. It was a real challenge, but at the same time, incredibly exciting, you know?
Yeah, this is happening.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Whoa.
In the time that we have left, let's talk about these wonderful women. They're all individual women. Some of them married to, what would it be, dual citizens or?
Yeah, the one is married to a Bulgarian man, and the other, Anita, you'll see in the feature, is married to a German conductor. So, and then one of the members is a single mother. So, yeah.
All of these individual stories. Let's talk about how the Cuban government actually subsidizes artists, or they continue to try to do that.
You know, when I first saw the women, actually, as I stood in that chapel, you know, like you start fantasizing, and I was thinking, wow, I wonder what they do when they're not singing, you know, when they're not here in this chapel. I bet she's probably a teacher, or maybe this one is, you know, a pharmacist. Who knows what these women do? And of course, I didn't realize that in Cuba, if you're a musician, you're a musician. That's what you do. And the government supports people with talent. And, or if you're a doctor or a teacher, whatever it is, that is your position in life. And everyone is, you know, given their equal amount of money per month, which everybody is shocked in the film when they say it's $30 to $40 a month.
Yeah. And that's, you know, more than what I've ever heard. Yeah.
Yeah. I know. A lot of times you hear 20, 25.
Right. Right.
Maybe it increased slightly, but you know, it is shocking for us as Americans to realize, wow, that they're living on, and things are not cheap in Cuba.
Things are not cheap. And depending on the food subsidies and availability of food,
right.
Food subsidies, but education is there.
Education,
medical care is there.
You got it. So it is a different culture. It's a totally different way of life. But also, again, coming from the U.S., seeing Cubans and the lifestyle, especially 2014, people didn't even have cell phones, let alone the internet. So there was this connectivity that you would see between people that I would look at and think, wow, we've kind of lost that, because we're always looking at that phone. You know, we go to dinner and, oh, I got a call, I got a text. But in Cuba, that just wasn't happening. And everybody, there was a real presence when you would sit down to have a meal or have a conversation. There was no distraction. And again, you would see that, again, the family structure, you've got multi-generations sometimes living together in the same house or on the same block. Which, you know, we don't have that. My grandparents were in Nebraska and I was in LA, you know, and we would go once a year. But seeing just, again, the lifestyle and the benefits in a way of that culture.
Tell me about, briefly, each one of these women. Give me a thumbnail sketch of each one of these women.
Okay, well, you've got the soprano Cosette, single mother, has a son who's now in his early 20s. When I was there, I went back to hear them sing. It was the release of the Igrem album in Santiago. And we went to lunch a day later, and the young fellow, the young son of Cosette, was with us, and he got a phone call. Oh, on Monday, I have to go into the military. It was just like that. It was, you know, you don't get a letter. It was just a phone call. And this was Saturday. So he had one more day to be with Cosette. That was a huge thing. I was stunned, you know, just that's how that worked. But anyway, so Cosette has struggled in a way because she has just one income. If everybody gets their $30, let's say she gets $30, the other vocal Vitas have husbands, so that helps a lot in terms of the family income. Anita, who is the director of the group, is married to Michael, who is the German conductor. She does not have children. They're very devoted to the vocal Vitas and being a musician her entire life. Anya is the mezzo-soprano. She has a husband who is a writer and editor, and they have one daughter. He's very involved in her care because, you know, she's off doing her gigs and sometimes doing some travel. They did travel to Europe a couple of times to perform, and I think to Central America. So there are times that they go away, and Oscar, her husband, would be the one to really look after their daughter. And then the last Vida, Marjorie, is the contralto. She's the bass of the group, and she's sort of the leader in terms of organizing the music and conducting them. And she's married to the Bulgarian gentleman who kind of comes and goes. He's 6 months away and 6 months in Cuba. And she's got a whole network of kids from her first marriage who are adults. She's got a couple of grandchildren. So they're just amazing women. And there was an age range. I mean, Anya being the younger, I think in her mid-30s when we first started filming, they've been friends for, you know, I think some of them 20 years, and have been singing together first in a big choral group and then branching out to do the quartet maybe 8-10 years ago.
So the government supports artists with training and whatever they might need, particularly need artistically. Is that correct?
Yes, yes, very much so. It seems like it's just not an issue. They can't really relate to the idea of, you know, because you think of musicians here, people you might see in a jazz club at night, and by day they may be doing something else entirely to earn a living. So for musicians in Cuba, I think it's a real kind of surprise that that's the way it is.
Well, I think the unfolding of this story, especially all of the things, we don't want to give things away.
Right.
But all of the things that are encountered in this wonderful journey from the inception of the group, your discovery of the group, the development of the group and its journey to the United States and the notoriety that it's getting and notoriety that it first got is really important. And it's one of the many, many wonderful films streaming at the 22nd annual Port Townsend Film Festival now through October 3rd. Soy Cubana. Robin, tell me briefly about the crew that was with you. We want to give a shout out to all of them.
An amazing crew. And I'll mention the three main guys. There was Jeremy, my son, and Evilo. And they ended up taking co-director credit because they were both so involved. It really took the two of them. Evilo was more of the cinematographer. He's an incredible cinematographer and had that visual sense of how the film would be shot. Jeremy, being the narrative director, had the sense of the story and kind of just knew what to say at the right time. You know, because as you know, with documentary, you're getting what you get. And it was important, I think, to sort of let things evolve. I think we all sort of, as a team, we're able to kind of step back and say, okay, they've arrived in LA, now what? I mean, we knew they had three gigs that they were going to be doing during this three-week period, but the rest of it was just this serendipitous journey. Each day, I would have people call and say, oh, could you meet me here? I want to meet them. Let's bring them to our recording studio. And it would happen. And it totally... it was not planned. It just occurred.
And the crew and you following things as they lead you.
Yeah.
The director, Jeremy Unger, co-director, Evilo Ketov.
Yes.
And yes, Augustine Rexash.
Yes. And I should say, I found him, you know, I didn't know who was going to edit this film when with the short. And it was, again, a route of reaching out to people because I needed somebody who spoke Spanish. And I found Augie, and not only did he speak Spanish, but he was born in Puerto Rico, came here as an adult. And he knew the culture, he knew the sensibility, and did a great job with the short, and then very generously said, I'm in for the feature. So we had that continuity, the same editor the entire time. Incredible collaborator, but also just very insightful in helping to create the right story arc that would keep people watching.
Editing is extremely important, and I can tell you that from an audio point of view. Mm-hmm. But audiovisual is even more so.
Yes.
Robin Unger, thank you so much for joining us here, KPTZ.
Thank you, Chris.
And we look forward to seeing Soy Cubana streaming during the 22nd annual Port Townsend Film Festival through October 3rd. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks so much. And thank you to the Port Townsend Film Festival and the whole community. Lots of love. Changui será bailar mi changui, lo canto solo para ti. Changui será bailar mi changui, y ahora baila y dime. Cuando me dime cuánto.